Talking with Sam Hamill, the author of Measured by Stone on Curbstone Press, founding editor of Copper Canyon Press, and the director of Poets Against War. So what is the danger, then, of the business class of poets, the MFA grad?
Well, what happens is people with a problem with their ego build little creeks and cliques and turfs and neighborhoods, and they become the little lords of their little neighborhood. And, you know, a little humility before the task is a good idea. And when you build followers, you don't build leaders. I mean, followers aren't leaders. And poets need to be leaders of their language and leaders of their art.
It's very interesting that the planned next question I had to do with the section of your book that's entitled Lessons from Thieves. No, I didn't need to make that intentional a segue, but that's where I was going with that before you went into that last bit about, you know, the ego building of the business class of poets, to use your words about it. But also here, we had an interesting conversation on the ferry coming back from Do Bay, talking about the basic teachings of Confucius. And so maybe you can weave the last thread about the business class into how it stands in opposed to that Confucian basic teaching. I mean, if we go back to Confucius and the way he explained it on the ferry,
the great learning,
we see where this business class begins to be part of the danger of that by building
sure.
the ego. So even
the Neo-Confucians were a perfect example of how you corrupt the fundamentally wonderful teachings of Confucius, and you create an enormous bureaucracy within which everyone is struggling for their own turf. The same thing happens in the poetry community when you get into the business of it. You know, who gets the paycheck? Who gets to give the reading? Who gets to be the master teacher? And people who are master teachers for a livelihood and who do this constantly, I mean, what a weird perspective on the world. Day in and day out, you're talking to this little handful of people who are your admirers. I mean, it's very difficult, I would think, for someone like that to keep their head above the water.
When you have acolytes.
Yeah. And sycophants.
So there's a line in Testament of the Thief, I never cause a disturbance, no too loud laughter, no angry glance. Is there an anecdote that goes with that, no too loud laughter?
Well, you know, one of the knocks on me is I'm too intense. And I have a very famous, very loud laugh. And I've been criticized for that by certain kinds of people. So I'm just thumbing my nose at them.
My neighbor at the new Splab said, I knew things were going well because I could hear your laugh through the walls. And so I'm thinking, okay, no too loud laughter, very good. I'm not in the thief category when it comes to that. But the ability to have that kind of laugh is what you're getting at. The ability to be so open and vulnerable that you can have that kind of laugh.
Well, and in my case, I'm deaf, and that makes a lot of me loud. I mean, you know, we deaf people, we don't know how loud our voice is. We really can't tell. And we tend to be loud because we don't hear ourselves, you know.
Yeah. There's also another...
But I was loud before I was deaf, so, you know, I'm just kind of a boisterous kind of guy sometimes. And sometimes I'm very quiet.
And your intensity?
Well, what about it?
Where do you think that comes from? And why is it so feared in this culture?
Well, first of all, I paid certain kinds of prices for the way I've conducted my life. I spent many years in a kind of voluntary poverty. I was nearly 20 years at Copper Canyon Press before I started getting a paycheck. I taught in prisons, and I learned to really love those men. And even though some of them did really horrible things, I saw how the system screws over them. But yet, as I used to tell my students there, they can keep you behind bars, but they can't imprison your imagination. And your imagination is where you really live anyway, whether you're in jail or not. So it's really about what you do with your imagination. And I have an idea about spending my life in the service of something larger than myself, or something larger than the consumption of goods. And that was to be in the service of poetry. A lot of people don't understand what that entails. And they see my attitude and my frankness as threatening. But that, frankly, is more their problem than my problem. I don't threaten anyone. I'm devoted to nonviolence. But I'm also devoted to appreciating a non-materialist culture and to creating a non-materialist culture. And I'm a socialist who lives in a capitalist state, which means that I'm confronted every day by the profound immoralism of my own country.
And a culture which fears someone like you who dedicates their life to something non-material.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, I mean, that goes...
It's repressive.
Goes to the core of the how you left Copper Canyon Press.
Yeah, yeah.
Something wrong with a culture that allows something like that to happen.
Well, of course there is. But it happens all the time. You know, what they did to me was what George Bush did to Iraq. They built up a straw man and said, he's threatening, and let's get him.
Right. What?
So, me and Saddam, you know?
So the people who listen to this in retrospect, who were all hoping that the election of November 2, 2010 didn't turn out the way it's likely to turn out, they wonder, what happens to these guys who set up the straw men? Where is the justice? Can we take solace in the fact that anytime there's hubris involved, the person's going to go down, or is there more to it than that?
No, there's no reason why we should expect justice in a system that's built the way our system is built. As long as they're going to engage in the politics of personal destruction, as Karl Rove called it, then anything is fair game. Rumor, innuendo, blasphemy, lies, deceits, double dealings, it's all business. And American business people do this all the damn time.
And if you've got money, you can do it.
Yeah, sure.
That justifies
sure.
it. Bill Ransom said a very interesting thing. You know, I told him that in Auburn, you look at a typical South or Central American country and there's a coup d'etat, and what's the first thing that happens? They take over the radio station one, they shoot the poets two. What am I doing in Auburn? I'm doing radio and poetry, right?
Well,
and Bill said, but in this country they don't assassinate you, they assassinate your character.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, spot on.